Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, Crimelanders. Thank you so much for tuning in again today. You are in for such a treat. Today's episode, first of all, I don't know what it was about this story, but I definitely found this story one of my more interesting stories of late. Obviously, I love all the stories, otherwise I wouldn't do them. But this one really had me licking my lips. Absolutely loved it. And I also loved my guest today. His name is Conor Behan. He has a brilliant podcast, Housewives and Me. And before I met Conor, I had a couple of people in my life, my nearest and dearest, telling me you need to check out this podcast because everyone who knows me knows that I'm utterly obsessed with The Real Housewives. And it is just such a deadly podcast. And then I met Conor and he was just such a gorgeous person. We really clicked from the get-go and he is just the best company. He's smart, he's funny, he's such a good guest on today's episode. He's also a radio presenter in 2FM and he is resident DJ in The George. Yes, you may have heard of it. Ireland's most iconic nightclub. It is the gay nightclub there on Georgia Street. I was at a wedding a couple of weeks ago. We were all saying it is just the best music in town. And Conor is DJ in the George as well. So as well as having a podcast, radio, doing a bit of radio presenting, he's also a DJ. To be quite honest, I'm just getting tired even listing off all the things Conor's up to. He is just such a deadly guest. You're really going to enjoy today's episode. If you do want to support us, you can rate or review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. It takes about 30 seconds if you're just doing the stars, and you know what, it really, really helps so much. Also, we're mad to grow our community of Crimelanders. I am so excited at how well the podcast is doing. I just really think now we found our rhythm. I'm loving the guests. It's just such a joy. And if you do want to just even recommend us to a friend, that is the best way to grow this community of Crimelanders. So that is probably the primary thing you could do to help us out and support the podcast. If you have enjoyed it, obviously, if you haven't enjoyed the podcast, please just stay off the internet. Today's episode, as ever, deals with, you know, some themes which may be considered distressing. I think it's probably one of the less distressing ones. But who am I to say that? Listen, I'll leave it up to your own discretion. And without further ado, here's your episode. Enjoy.
We go and I'll do mine so you won't hear it say that, but
get okay. Nervous now.
So one, so actually, you know what, I'll do a clap and then you clap after me. So 1, 2, 3. Okay, perfect. So now, like, I'm recording a file here and I'll send it to you after.
Connor, I love that you're just so smart. I love picking up these little bits and bobs. Okay, right, will we dive right in? So Connor, okay, here we go.
Yes.
Welcome to Crimeland. My name is Julie J, and this week I'm chatting to one of my favorite new friends. It's
Connor Behan. Sorry, do I do that?
I never tell. This is so bad. Like, I have one job, which is to record the podcast and tell people they're announcing themselves. And I always forget at least one of those things.
I'm like obsessed too with like this whole thing in comedy world, because I don't do comedy and obviously you do, of like the offstage being introduced by somebody else. I think that's so fab.
Like someone being
please welcome the hilarious Julie J. And then you're like, oh my God, whoever said that is so nice. Oh, thank you. Like, I would be like, I'd be like mental for that if I was a comedian. I'd be like, yes.
Well, it's funny you say that, because Fred did a gig with the lovely Joe Rooney at the weekend, and Joe announced himself and he was saying, please welcome to the stage the fella who's still milking Father Ted 20 years later. It's Joe Rooney. But Fred was like, I think people thought I introduced Joe. So when I went up, they were like, what a dick. But I think with the intro thing, because Joanne does not like, you know, she's like, just introduce me, please don't be going through like, oh yeah, she's great, because I'll just be absolutely mortified.
Oh, I'd be like, 50 nights sold at Vicar Street.
Oh, I know.
The X Factor intro.
Joanne's like, please don't, Julie. But I did it once against her wishes, because I said, you know what, like, she deserves it because she's achieved so much. And then she was like, no, don't do, please. It's just like so embarrassing. The next time she was like, just introduce me. It's just so embarrassing. But then I thought afterwards, I must have sounded like such a bitter lemon. Welcome to the stage, Joanne McLean. Instead of welcome to the stage, the woman who has sold 60 nights in Vicar Street, made history, like listening off the podcast. No, I was just like, ah, here she is. Like, I must have sounded so mean-spirited. I'm going to just say what this podcast is about, because I don't know if I've actually announced this yet. So I am speaking to the lovely Connor Behan about Michaela McCollum, aka one half of the Peru 2.
Oh my god, it's about to happen.
It's about to happen, Connor. Now, I have to say, now, this one, relatively recent, not so long ago. I mean, I'm sure you remember it when this came out. It was 2013. But I'm just going to go into a bit of the backstory. I think for most of our Irish listeners, we're probably familiar. But for our international listeners, there might be a lot of new information here. And it really was a story that gripped Irish media for obvious reasons. I think when you hear what it's all about, you're going to understand the widespread public interest straight away. Now, I'm going to dive right in, Connor, if that's okay.
That's fine. I'm into this. God, I think it was 2013. Wow, I can't believe it's nearly that long ago.
Yeah. I have to say that did give me the heebie-jeebies. I mean, I would say that's probably the scariest part of this
story. The time has passed. The passage of time is the scariest
trigger,
story of all.
Trigger warning. This will remind you that you're getting older. That's how time works. Okay. So Michaela McCollum was born in 1993 in a small Irish border village, the youngest of 10 children. Her Protestant mother eventually split from her Catholic dad, and so they returned to Dungannon in County Tyrone, where they were very much in the Catholic minority. And in her book, You'll Never See the Daylight, which is a book that Michaela wrote about her life, it was essentially her memoir, she talks about suffering sectarian abuse and really just having a very tough time. So it was an awful lot going on. You know, her poor mom as well, like 10 kids.
That's crazy.
You're a single mother, you're living in the Republic in Monaghan, and you have to return to Dungannon with 10 kids as a single parent. And aside from that, you are obviously subject to a lot of abuse because of the sectarianism that was, you know, evident at the time. So just like pretty hard. When she is 16, so she's the baby of the family as well, which I think, you know, zero judgment, but I mean, this whole story does scream baby of the family. Like, for sure.
You're like, youngest of 10? I could have guessed.
Like, defo. So when she's 16, she moves in with a slightly older boyfriend who proves to be just really not a good guy, like terrible person, physically abusive, very controlling, emotionally abusive. And it's obviously a very traumatizing situation for her, especially given her age. Like, she's 16, like she's essentially a kid. So after living with this boyfriend, she moves in with a friend who's Protestant. So he happens to be Protestant. They're buddies. And shortly before she goes to Ibiza, she likes a post on Facebook. Now, this is the issue, Connor, with liking stuff on Facebook. I know, like, we talk about this a lot, like, just how, guilty are you if you like something on Facebook? Like, a lot of people, you know, kind of use the whole, like, it was an accidental like, as, you know, defense. But in this instance, she liked this post, which I suppose her friend's family, they kind of viewed this as announcing herself as a Republican. That results in his family rocking up to his apartment and basically demanding that he kick Michaela out. So, like, this is a lot of chaos. Like, you know, there's a lot going on. She's 19 now, and she's kind of almost like bouncing from one place to the other. Like, there's just a lot going on, Connor.
Sounds like she's kind of, well, she was in some kind of an abusive relationship situation. She's very young, has found like some kind of solace to the friend after a rocky moving around as a child. And then to have your home and your sense of place ripped away from you at that age is, 19 is still so young. It's a time when we're in like student flats or accommodation. They're living with a few friends and they're getting to kind of have their own like adulthood experience and come into themselves. And she's having this kind of, and listen, I don't know what the Facebook post was. Maybe there's a degree of like, they were right to be a bit pissed off, but still it's not great to have someone reefed out of their home, you know, over it.
Yeah, it's just, I suppose, it, like, for sure, I think you summed that up so well and so eloquently, Connor. Like, I mean, she's only a kid, and I suppose this was her home as well. So it just would have been, you know, really tough to suddenly kind of be out on your ear. I mean, it could have been, in the family's defense, it could have been like a up the rah post, you know? Like,
yeah, maybe it was offensive. You don't want to be like, it's not that, I literally, I don't know what the Facebook post was, but like, I can, like, just the, how destabilizing it would be to be kicked out. I can imagine.
Very, very destabilizing.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? I think that is the perfect word, Connor, because it seemed to be very destabilizing in that she did what we all kind of did, I think, when we were in our late teens, early 20s, and, you know, the shit had hit the fan. We just packed up a backpack and said, right, I'm off to Ibiza. So in June of that year, June 2013, Michaela makes the decision to go to Ibiza with no plan, just wants to get away from Dungannon and start afresh elsewhere. On the plane over, she meets a guy who gets her job in a party bar, and she dives headfirst into this, like, obviously big party hedonistic Ibiza scene. She phones her mom every day, sometimes twice a day. So she's actually very close to her mom. And even in the midst of this, and I do think in her defense, you know, and obviously she has come in for a lot of criticism over the years, I do think it says a lot about her in a person that even when she's in this chaotic stage in her life, like, I know when I was off raving, I wasn't ringing my mom twice a day. Like, you know, she obviously did have this really close relationship with her mother and stayed in touch.
I'm dying though, like, obviously it's so nice to stay in touch with your mom in your way, but like, I'm imagining her like in the smoking area of like DC-10 or something, and it's like, and how's so and so, yeah, and what should I have for dinner? Like this is some dance song, Blair. It's like, oh, I love that song actually.
Oh,
yeah,
get
send it
no
up.
No sleep.
Yeah, I'll send it to your mom. It's really good. It's a big hit on the island. It'll be out in a few months. Like, just like or an afters, and someone's like, does anyone have a rollie? And she's like, yeah. How was your day?
Well, look, I'd say her poor old mom, like, you know, single mother of 10 was probably just wrecked at this stage and was like, would you stop ringing me?
But you're like, ring me whenever, and it's 3 a.m. not now, but not now.
But like, look, it does, you know, it does kind of say a lot about their relationship. But then, of course, what happens, so the, you know, as I used to always say to my mother when I was off traveling, and I was a divil for staying in touch. Admittedly, it was a lot harder when I was off traveling because it was like the 1800s. So we couldn't, you know, it was harder to stay in touch with the fam. But the issue is then, of course, that when you stop, that's when alarm bells ring. Whereas in my defense, I was always saying to my mother, well, like, because I'm very rarely in touch, like, that's kind of keeping you safe. Ignorance is
You're like, I never started, so if I stop, you won't notice.
So Michaela stopped ringing around the end of July for about a week, and nobody can get hold of her. Her family are instantly worried because this is really not like her. It is very out of character. What her family don't know is that Michaela has gotten herself caught up in a very serious situation. So Michaela, as we've said, was into this party, you know, in this kind of party space in Ibiza. We've all been, I suppose, kind of, you know, going through one of these phases where just kind of on the lash, on the set all of the time. She's taking drugs like coke and ketamine. And after a couple of weeks, she befriends a guy called Davey. Now, her friends warn her against him. So he's an English guy. He's kind of well-dressed. Interestingly, which, you know, does kind of give you the heebie-jeebies, and we've all met these people before, very into giving older people drugs, but doesn't seem to be into taking drugs himself. Like, you know, very, just, you know, giving us the ick is what I'm saying. So the friends are kind of like, look, don't know about that guy, but she likes him. She kind of warms to him, befriends him. And one night, Davey takes her back to his gaff and persuades her to take acid for the first time. In the middle of the acid trip, Davey asks her to go to Barcelona to pick up a package. She's offered 5,000 for this and she thinks, grand, I'll do it. Because let's face it, Connor, she's on acid.
I love how, you know, mid-acid trip, I was offered 5 grand and I just said yes. I'm like, wait a damn minute. Like, that is so manipulative that someone was like, while you're tripping balls, whatever you do on acid, it's like, can I ask a favor? It's like
for most sure.
I'd ask is, can you pick the next song in the playlist? It's about the height of what I would imagine you'd want to be asked. Can you go and get us a pint of milk, actually? Like, no, I'm on acid. I'm not leaving the cast.
Can I ask a favor, do you mind if I put Britney on? Oh, thank God, because I thought you were going to ask me to fly to Barcelona to pick up a package. So she says yes, 5 grand, happy days. Now, the next day, she's obviously kind of, I suppose, coming out of this stupor. And she realizes that she has agreed to take a package on a plane for this guy, Davey. And now, I guess, so, you know, having read her book and watched the documentary, this is kind of glossed over a bit, but like, it was very much kind of like a drug saturated scene. So she knew herself that, like, look, this is a bit dodge. But very quickly, Davey passes her on to a guy who then passes her on to another guy called Mateo, who books a flight for her. When he's booking the flight, she asks him about the destination because she sees that he's booking a flight to Lima. She claims later that she thought Lima was in Spain, so that she'd no problem with this arrangement. And I have to say, I would forgive her that. Like, geography was never my strong point either.
Lima, is that a party town as well? Are they in season? Oh, Grant. Yeah, so it's not fair.
You know, you cannot just... Would you have known where Lima was when you were 19? You probably would, I'd say.
You're like, you strike me as a sword to know basic geography. You strike
me. I think, you know, when I first met you, Connor, he knows a lot about South American geography.
I think... I'm trying to put myself back in the place of, I feel like I would know it wasn't in Spain and be like, okay. Oh, wait, I thought I was going to blah. I think I'd know it was in South America, but I think I'd be like, can I just ask now, where's Lima?
Can I just double check?
Yeah, well, sorry.
She did say in the book, which again, I think really rang true, like that she didn't want to ask because she didn't want to seem, you know, stupid.
Naive.
That she didn't know. And you know what? I totally
they bank
get
on that,
that,
I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
So they're like, yeah, we want you to not ask.
Yeah, and I suppose you can understand as well at that age, like maybe she didn't want to come across as a bit, I mean, this is now, by the way, from her perspective, what she's saying, but I kind of, you know, I'm kind of taking her at face value here, because I can see how that would happen, especially when you're 19, that you don't want to ask a question which you might perceive as silly, but which is actually a question you should ask.
See, listen, ladies, if there's one thing we can learn from this.
If you're ever
sisters,
asked, yes,
girlfriend, sisters, listen up.
If you're ever asked to take a package, it's okay to ask where Lima is. That's what we've learned.
Do you remember? I know it's not a print magazine anymore, but Glamour magazine used to have like a section where it's like, it's okay to, and it'd be like, you know, wear odd socks on laundry day. It's like, it's okay to ask if the drug deal you're doing is happening in Spain or South America. It's okay to take acid and then be asked to take.
Well, I have to laugh. Odd socks on laundry day. Connor, I just call that a Tuesday in this house.
But it's all those real, like, it's okay to, like, only straighten your hair once a week or whatever. Like, and now it's like, and then here's a few more we could add to the list.
This is definitely one we can add to that list for sure. So, she thinks Lima's in Spain. She goes to Palma then in Mallorca, and it's there that she meets up with this girl called Melissa Reed, who is a young Scottish woman who will also be picking up a package for these guys. They are told by the men involved that it's very simple, that these guys know everybody, and if anyone looks at their bags or questions them, it's because it's somebody who works for them and just to play along. Melissa Reed is a girl that Michaela's never met before, and when she gets off the plane in Mallorca, I suppose initially Michaela thinks that Melissa is a bit bossy, is what she says in the book. And perhaps, like with all these things, it might necessarily be a natural friendship, but obviously they have to row in together. The mm-hmm. first thing that happens is the girls are taken to a house and have their phones taken, and then they're given Blackberries to use, like kind of burner phones.
Oh my God.
Yes, I know. That's the bit that's really shocked you. The Blackberries.
Can I ask now? I've just Googled the Peru too. So Melissa was the blonde one.
Yes.
Sorry, not to reduce a woman to her hair color, but I just, because I'm like, I can, the images of them are so burning in my brain.
McKenna has the updo.
Yes. And in the photos, the updo is up, and it's certainly up. I will say that.
It is def up. And actually, she does kind of poke fun of herself in the BBC documentary that she did. And she kind of opens with, you know, my name's Michaela McCallum, owner of the most infamous updo in the world. I mean, it's up. Like, when it's up, it's up. It's definitely when, up.
As Cardi B would say, if it's up, then it's up. That's actually what that song was inspired by.
So the two, Melissa and Michaela, they hang out in Mallorca for a few days, and then Melissa goes first to Peru and Michaela follows. Now, mm-hmm. in a really bizarre twist, Michaela says it's only on the plane when she spots the map on the screen in front of her detailing the flight trajectory that she cops that Lima is in Peru, which is in South America. And it's then that she starts to panic. I mean, we're talking like, this is the hangovers of all hangovers. Do you know what I mean? Like, this
right,
is
yeah.
pretty
talk about
bad.
A walk of shame. You're like, no, I'm the flight of shame. I'm literally on a plane to Lima and I've just realized where I'm going.
The flight of shame. So when she gets off the plane, she reconvenes at the airport with Melissa. And at this point, they really are caught, I suppose, in the sense, not in a literal sense, but they really are between a rock and a hard place. They are utterly trapped. In Peru, they're in touch with this guy called Mateo, who tells them to do all the tourist stuff to make it look like they're on holidays.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So they're doing Machu Picchu, they're doing bus trips and all this kind of backpacker crack. And I do have to laugh because her descriptions are like of this, like she's just not a backpacker girl. Like she's like, this is not for me. No, like I'm out. So she's having a lot of doubts. She's kind of, you know, obviously getting increased. She's quite literally sobering up now and questioning what the hell is going on and how she's gotten herself into this situation. They're told that there are people watching them the whole time, and she does seem to feel threatened, but obviously has no way to get out of this now. She's just in too deep, basically. They stay in backpacking hostels and kind of present themselves as general backpackers. And then they get back into Lima, and a few hours before they're to go, a few hours before they're leaving for Spain, this guy arrives with huge packets of porridge full of cocaine. And it's then that she realizes the sheer scale of this, because she still believes, like obviously Davey, when he asked her on this acid trip, will you bring a package? Like you're thinking a package, you're not thinking
a
20 kilogram suitcase full of porridge packets. Like that's not a package. So she can barely lift the bag. It's so heavy. But of course, at this point, they continue on to the airport because realistically, how is she going to get out of this now? So she just says, look, I need to just focus on getting out of this country and just getting out of this situation.
Sorry, I just realized, I thought not, this is probably why I would also get stumped by this. I thought she was bringing a small thing to them and then she thought she was coming home. So really the package was all along going to be the porridge bags full of, you know what.
But I mean, isn't that always, like we've all watched Banged Up Abroad. Like it's always the case.
She was doing a drop off, hop on the flight home, and that she was going around with a little bit of coke on her the whole time. I was like, oh my God, this is mad. So actually oh my God, sorry, wow. Everyone listening is like, yeah, dumbass, that's the whole story. But I'm like, okay.
Well, no, but you know what, Connor? What I think is, like, with the story, I think as you hear the story, like, I'm just saying now as somebody, I made very bad decisions in life. Like, I can actually see myself getting caught up in something like this. Like, it just, I am surprised that I never smuggled drugs, is what I'm saying. Because I
maybe
really
you did
do...
and didn't realize. You were like, saying, there was always this dust on my bag.
Yeah.
I never
was. And this bag, which was kind of unnaturally heavy, but anyway, just handed it to the man and he was happy out. But look, I actually get this. And it's in the airport. Now, remembering that they were told, look, if anyone approaches you in the airport, don't worry, they work for us. It's all gravy, baby.
God.
They're in the airport and their eyes, like, I watched this really interesting documentary about, like, Peruvian police. Obviously, this is a huge issue, like the whole drug smuggling and all of that. And they always say it's like shoplifters. You always can spot a shoplifter because they're looking around rather than the items that they're in their hands. And it's the opposite with drug smugglers, that, like, you spot a drug smuggler because they can't take their eyes off their case. They're just... they're nervous. They're, you know what I mean? Like, they're kind of easy to spot in that way.
They've either got Charlotte Tilbury in there or a bag of cocaine. It's one or the other.
Charlotte
Pat McGrath
Tilbury.
In there, is it? It's Pat McGrath in there. You got a deal? Or is it drugs? They're both worth the same amount. If you think someone's smoking drugs, they could just have a very high-end makeup bag.
They could. Well, and I think you're right. That is a solid point. In this instance, it was probably the form.
They weren't anyways. No.
Yeah, definitely the form. But so they're pulled aside in this airport queue. The police search their bags and obviously they see straight away that Melissa McCain are carrying $1.8 million worth of cocaine. There's so much cocaine.
Oh,
and it's
my God.
Which is a lot.
Me, it's just one envelope they brought over. No.
So it's obviously very badly hidden. That it's so badly hidden that the police actually laugh at them. At this point, the girls are a bit paranoid, but they still believe that this is all for show and the police are working with their mates back in Spain.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
So it's, but as this goes on, they realize that that's not the case. So they kind of go from being, and I think those initial pictures, like, obviously they look completely stunned. They're like rabbits in headlights, but there is almost a surprising calmness to them. And
yeah,
Michaela would say that that's because even at that stage she thought, okay, this is all part of it, but then it very quickly unraveled and it hit them that, oh no, like, these guys lied to us and we're screwed, basically. So I mean, this attracted a lot of media coverage, you know, a lot of international attention. When people hear about these two young women arrested in Lima, initially there's a lot of calls for support. Michaela's family actually start, which really breaks my heart, they start a GoFundMe because they believe Michaela when she says the only reason she took these drugs was because she was threatened and she had no choice. Ultimately, what would come to be the issue with Michaela was that she obviously had lied. She's basically saying anything to get herself out of these awful prison conditions. And, you know, again, I think we can sympathize with that. Like, she's in a prison in South America where we have overcrowded cells, violence, what she refers to as overt sexuality, cockroaches, no sanitation. So, like, she's just saying anything to get her out of there. But obviously, you know, it doesn't align with what actually happened. The maximum sentence for drug trafficking in Peru is 15 years. And her family at this point has hired a defense lawyer who seems very happy for them to play the "we were threatened," you know, this quote, "we were threatened and we didn't know what we were doing" card. So he's like, listen, that's going to be our approach. That's going to be our tactic here. But interestingly, they befriend this translator who becomes really good to the girls. She really advocates for them. She brings them commissary items. And she is the one who convinces them to tell the truth. Michaela doesn't want to tell her mother the truth because she has lied to her and she doesn't want to break her heart. But in the end, she convinces a prison guard, who she later said was kind to them, to ring her, to allow her to ring her mother. She told her mother that she made the whole thing up. And her mother obviously was devastated because at this point her mother had come out and defended her on TV and radio. Like, she'd gone on Lorraine saying that she believed her daughter and she stood with her daughter. So when Michaela comes out and says she's lied and she hadn't been taken hostage, she hadn't been threatened, this is when the tide of public opinion really turns against her.
I'm also like, obviously, I can see why, having done all that, her mom was upset. But I love how it started with, you're so afraid for your mom to know you went on the batter for 3 months in Ibiza, that you're like, you allow her to then effectively go in a media campaign going, she's never done drugs in her life. You're like, oh, actually, mom, I was a bit of a sesh head for three
months. She just went to Ibiza for the pints. Like, but you know, again, I can see
how... only drinking water at those gigs when you go. Why do you never have a drink? Oh, I don't need to have a drink.
I mean, this is real, like, tell me you're an Irish girl without telling me you're an Irish girl. It's very like, Irish. I know I'm risking 15 years, but I don't want to tell my mom I lied.
That's what I mean. Like, I don't want my mom to know I knew drugs, but I also don't want to be in jail for 15 years. So, like, which of the two, which will I do? Like, she was like, jail. I'll do jail.
But you know what? The thing is that, look, she was obviously right.
It's extreme situation. It was of course.
And at least she did admit the truth. She and Melissa Reid, obviously, because they've admitted, you know, they pled guilty. They've said they did what they did. You know, they did give some information about the gang in question, but they, like, you know, Michaela would later say, like, she didn't give, obviously, makes sense. You're not going to tell them everything you know, because you just don't know what these people are capable of either, but they gave them a little to kind of sweeten the deal. So they end up being sentenced to 8 years and 6 months and moved to this notorious prison called Anton II in the desert outside of Lima. The first 6 months, as you can imagine, Connor...
6 months, Jesus.
Well, the first 6 months... So, like, 8 years and 6 months was the sentence. But the first 6 months, she said, were the toughest. Because, like, you know, obviously, she's kind of been thrown into this situation where there's 30 people to one cell. There's one toilet. They have to work in these workshops. And, you know, they kind of... Seems like that they were kind of, like, making handbags and stuff. Like, kind of selling kind of touristy items that would then be sold on. So they worked in these workshops, and one day she nearly gets stabbed when she accidentally skips a queue, but luckily she's saved by a prison friend who intercepts the knife. And like, that was something fairly innocuous, like that they were queuing up to play their DVDs for film night and she inadvertently, you know, skipped a queue, and then this woman attacks her. So it shows just how little value is placed on life, that she was nearly murdered over a DVD, basically. Another time, a woman at her table in work, because they work in these workshops where they're kind of making stuff, she whispers something to Michaela one day and hops on the table and attacks this other woman in an extremely violent assault. So she's finding it really tough, but then... Jesus. She spots this girl in her cell has her nails done, and she says, oh, where'd you get your nails done? And she finds
hey, queen, are those acrylics? Fierce.
Well, the nails, these acrylics saved her life, because she finds out about this beauty salon that exists. So she goes along and finds in one of the cells that they have like this beauty parlor. She blags herself a job, and that is when she really shines. She makes friends, her Spanish improves, and she ends up making some money running this little business, because, like, I don't know if you know anyone who's familiar with these South American prisons, bizarrely,
you know how it is,
you can make your own money in these places, you know, like girl boss. you can be a girl boss too, is what I'm saying. And she took the girl bossing to the next level, because they then had this thing, right, called delegado, which is kind of like your prison wing rep, and they act as like an intermediary between the prisoners and the prison authorities. And Michaela decides to run for it. Now Melissa Reid tells her, look, you're mad, because you're not a native Spanish speaker, like there's all the language difficulties, there's no way you're going to get it. But unbelievably, Connor, she does get it, becoming the first non-native Peruvian to get such a position in a jail. So like, this was like kind of a high status role. So she's, after overcoming the fact that she went in there with not a word of Spanish, you know, like, she obviously has made enough friends that she's actually won the vote to be this delegado, which is incredible.
Yeah, she was at networking. She was the OG influencer.
She was schmoozing. So she was released from prison in March of 2015. And then she's to stay in Peru till February 2016, when she returns home and I suppose kind of goes down. I don't know. Do you remember she kind of went down this Daily Mail route of the posed paparazzi pics on the beach? I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
She writes the book. She goes on Piers Morgan in 2019. And I mean, I don't know if you saw Connor, but it was just, did you watch it?
She did that in 2019. I don't remember that.
Oh, no. It was just, so Pierce utterly destroys her. It's actually a really uncomfortable watch. And regardless of what she has done, you know, obviously she did commit a very serious crime here. It does kind of give you the ick just to watch him take her down. Like, it's a really uncomfortable watch.
He delights in that kind of thing, doesn't he?
Oh, like, it's horrible. Like, it's just not nice. And
She did Good Morning Britain, actually. I have a memory of, yeah. And she's blonde and stunning, I will say.
Yes, I mean, we're loving the highlights. We are loving the highlights. That was one of your better decisions, Michaela.
Once a salon queen, always a salon queen. You're from the nails to the hair.
For sure. And she's looking great. And she, like, it's what I think's really interesting as well is, regardless of what you think of her initial crime, she really thrived in this horrendous situation. She comes out of prison. She's completely off drugs. She undergoes a degree. So she goes back to do her A-levels, which I always find so heartwarming. Like, anyone who goes back and says, do you know what, I want to finish my school. She goes back to do her A-levels. She pursues a degree. She has twins. So she gets into this very short relationship. And, you know, she ends up pregnant with twins. And she's just very focused on moving forward and being the best mother she can be. I suppose one thing that didn't help in this interview with Pierce was she did say that the media had been unfair to her. But again, I think these kind of set up paparazzi pics and all of that, like, you know, people are kind of throwing that back in her face. But I think it is a generational thing. You know, you can understand, having spent 3 years in a South American prison, how she went down this route when she's young. She looks great.
You have no money.
Like, no money, no income.
Exactly. And it's like a thing, you see it happen with a certain strand of celebrity, even if they've not been to jail. Like, young women who look a certain way are kind of told by the media, there's money in your looks and your body, so you might as well make it. Which, however you may feel about that, if she was in her position of, I'm starting from scratch, and like, it's not like she can just walk into a shop and go, hi, here's my CV, my name's Michaela McCullum, because it's like, everyone knows who you are.
Exactly.
So,
you know, this
have
thing,
to
exactly.
muck in and it's, get famous.
It's, and you see, that's it. So I feel like she's kind of, in a way, maybe she was damned if she did and damned if she didn't. Like, she did talk of coming home and feeling very ostracized and judged, which of course is understandable. You know, she had lied to her family in the media initially, and this did cause her mother's particularly, you know, a lot of hurt. But again, you know, he wasn't guilty of inadvertently hurting their family or, you know, making some bad decisions that at that age as well. I feel since her release, she has, as I've said, you know, written a book. She took part in this BBC documentary. The BBC were quick to say at the time that she wasn't paid for it. She's a single mother now of her twin boys. She continues to do modeling, but ultimately is living a quiet life in Northern Ireland. Her accomplice, Melissa Reid, of course, has lived a private life since her release and returned to Scotland and has never courted media attention, seeking, understandably, a life of anonymity and to put the whole chapter behind her. Whatever you say about Michaela, it is hard not to be impressed by a young woman who, like so many of us, was clearly lost, making bad decisions, but ultimately flourished in a place a lot of us would find hard to survive. I mean, of course, it's not a victimless crime. It is a very serious crime, but I do think we have to credit her with the fact that, like, she did turn her life around and she made the best of a bad situation.
I mean, it's that thing of, like, you can't excuse bad behavior, but you can't let people, you have to believe in rehabilitation or change some way, or else,
otherwise what's the point?
And like, you can't just believe in, like, throwing people completely on the scrap heap. Whether you agree with writing a book and going on Good Morning Britain is, I guess, fair enough, but like, if that was what was an option for her to make, because maybe she thought, right, if I do this for a year, it's enough, it's the money I'd make at a regular job over 3 or 4 years. Exactly. And I save my money, like, who knows, like, maybe she's now able to, like, budget off of the book royalties enough to maybe, you know, who knows.
Well, and I do think, like, obviously the fact, like, you know, I'm even talking about the Peru too, like, nobody really talks about the gang involved here either. You know, obviously one theory is that the girls were set up. This happens all the time, that the gang was happy to give up some of their product and sacrifice these girls as scapegoats to give them, the police, the Peruvian police, a high profile haul. And then obviously that it ultimately facilitated more drugs getting through. Nobody, including this Davy person who initially approached Michaela to smuggle these drugs, has ever been charged.
Is he still kicking around Spain, like, you know, handing
out
yokes and
all? You know he is kicking around Spain. Like, there's all these English lads and you're like, guys, you should have come home in 2013, love. Like, I mean, that is definitely the vibe for sure. That is the story, Connor, of Michaela McCallum, one half of the infamous Peru 2. It's a great story, isn't it?
The woman behind the hun bun.
The woman, actually.
That's the next book. That's the
next
book.
I'm telling you, that needs to be. Like, I don't know. How would you feel? Like, I know, I feel, just as a final note, I hope it hasn't come across that I'm being too soft on her here in that, you know, it's obviously a very serious crime, but I just think putting myself in that position at that age, I can actually see how you can get yourself into these really tricky situations. And I do think she made the best of it.
I think too, like, because I would be in my early 30s now. And so when this story broke, I would have been, I mean, it's a good to 10 years. I would have been like mid, early 20s, I guess. So like 23, 24, I suppose. So like, I think at that age, I would not have joined the dots of how young she was when she was in Ibiza and what had gone down, and then how young she was trying to get through the, like, and later on in the story arc, how like young she was trying to just keep her head down through the prison side of things, you know? So like it's even now, what, I think she's what, maybe 28 now. So like, she's still very young. So she was like 26 when she did the Piers Morgan chat. So like, she's not even hit 30 now. So like, it's a lot to kind of go through before you hit 30. Like, most of us are like, oh, I had one mad weekend at Oxygen in 2012. She's like, you want to hear about my 3 years in prison, honey? Like, it's, you know, like, and then obviously you add in the kind of scandal around it. As you say, like, where is the attention on the gangs that do this to people, where they put them in these positions?
It's definitely one. I think it is really fascinating. Like, you know, I love me a bit of banged up abroad and all of that. I think it's the human interest angle that I do find interesting. And I think as somebody who, as I said, I'm very easily persuaded. I make very bad decisions. I am just so grateful Davey didn't come up to me in D210 saying, what was the name of that club again? D10, D2?
DC 10 or DC is one club. I mean, I've never been to...
There's numbers floating around saying, do you want to take a package?
Yeah, I've never been to a BP. It's just a name that sticks in my head. Yeah, like, would I?
Well, you know. How did you say it? I'd love
Even to. Now, you'd be like, Fred, I've just gotten this offer and I'm going to run it by my agent, but I think it's a really good one. It's just pick up something and I'll do some shows around the pickup, you know, I'll turn it into a touring opportunity. You know, women can have it all. And then you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I know comedy is a competitive field. Maybe that's what you've got to do now to stand out.
I think that could be the next step. Connor Behan, it has been an absolute pleasure. I just love you. You're so brilliant.
Thank you, same to you. Really
just a fantastic guest. If we are looking to find you, Connor, when you're not hanging out in Ibiza, you are on Instagram at It's Connor Behan. Would you be into the TikTok, the Twitter?
I have a Twitter and an Instagram. I have a TikTok under the same name, but I've done nothing with it. But I did take the name to have it because I was like, one day I might want to be a TikTok star. So It's Connor Behan is where you'll find me on Instagram and Twitter. I have a podcast, which is called Housewives and Me, which is on all the podcast spaces, and you can get it. There are social pages for it on Twitter and Instagram under Housewives and Me as well.
And if you don't watch Housewives, I'm sorry, but we don't need your download over here. Like, I mean, there are two types of people in the world. There are people who watch Housewives and there are people who don't. Connor, it's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.